Caroline, Willie, D. Mays, 102.5, 106.3, The Game and The Game Nashville app. We're streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook Live every single day. And we're broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. So we are almost locked in, not quite yet, into the Predators Stanley Cup playoffs opponent in the first round, at least. It's looking like 91% likely that it is the Vancouver Canucks. So joining us now to preview the Predators in the Stanley Cup playoffs is our friend Adam Vingan, who will join us every single Wednesday throughout the Stanley Cup playoffs. Adam, happy to have you on board weekly. Just want to open it up to how you view the Canucks as a potential opponent for the Nashville Predators.
Yeah, we talked about it a little bit last week, and the Canucks clinched their first division title last night, I believe since 2013, by defeating the Calgary Flames. So some history made there, not really history because they've won division titles before, but it's been a long time since the Canucks won a division title. They've also won 50 games for the first time since 2012. So it's been a while since the Canucks have had this type of success. But sort of what we talked about last week, you know, the Canucks got off to such a great start. But over the past 2+ months, they've been playing slightly above 500 hockey. You know, since they came back from their all-star break / bye week on February 6th, the Canucks have a 17-11-4 record, which is a .594 points percentage, which is 14th. In the NHL since February 6th. By comparison, the Predators over that same span, 21-7-3, a .726 points percentage, which is third in the NHL, only behind the New York Rangers, who have won the President's Trophy, and the Carolina Hurricanes. So the interesting thing about the Canucks is they played the past month without their starting goaltender, Thatcher Demko, who suffered a knee injury in early March. He came back last night, made 39 saves on 40 shots, in his first game action in about 6 weeks. But when you look at their goals against during the time he was out of the lineup compared to their goals against before he got hurt, they were roughly the same. They actually played really well defensively in his absence. Their offense has cratered compared to the beginning of the season. They're averaging 2.84 goals per game over their past 32 games, which is 24th in the league. So their defense has helped them win a lot more games than their offense over the past few months. So I'm not really sure what kind of Canucks team you're getting. I mean, are you getting a team that's rounding into form? You know, they're playing well defensively. Maybe that offense comes back. Or are you catching a team that got off to such a hot start and has been treading water for most of the past few months? So it makes the Canucks a really fascinating potential first-round opponent.
And not only do you know what Canucks team you're getting, you also don't know when you're going to get them. We heard on the 32 Thoughts podcast with Elliot Freeman and Jeff Merrick, Elliot said that he anticipates the Canucks' first playoff game to be played on Tuesday, which would be 8 days between the Predators' final game and their first playoff game. I don't know if a team has ever had 8 full days of rest between the end of the regular season and the beginning of the playoffs, Adam. But if that is, in fact, what the case is, how do you approach that week plus of balancing rest and balancing trying to mimic as much in-game play as you possibly can?
Yeah, it's a good question. And I can lean on some experience. You know, back in 2017, it wasn't the end of the regular season to the first round of the playoffs, but after the Predators swept the Blackhawks in the first round of the playoffs, and Willie can correct me if I'm wrong here, they had at least a week between the end of the Blackhawks series and the beginning of the Blues series. They definitely had a lot of time, and I know they took several days off after the series, and they had some really tough practices. And, I mean, that's really all you can do. I mean, rest is a weapon, I think, at this time of the season. Now, as far as we know, the Predators aren't nursing any significant injuries, but it doesn't hurt to have a little extra time, in my opinion, to rest up, heal up before the grind of the postseason when there are very few days off. And as you said, Caroline, it's been reported in multiple places that we're not really sure what the schedule is going to look like for the Canucks and Predators, if that is indeed the matchup, just because Rogers Arena apparently has a ton of concerts going on in the next few weeks. But, you know, it reminded me of, and I don't think this is going to happen, but I think you guys get a kick out of this. Back in 2009, I think it was, the Capitals and the Penguins were playing in the playoffs, and Mellon Arena, which is the Penguins' old arena, was having so many events, including a Yanni concert. Remember Yanni, everybody? They were having a Yanni concert that they had to play games 4 and 5 and back-to-back. I think it was game 4 in Pittsburgh, game 5 in Washington, because of a Yanni concert that could not be moved at Mellon Arena. So at least this time, I guess it's like Justin Timberlake and Pearl Jam in Rogers Arena, yes. I think it is. So at least
better than Yanni, at least.
Yeah, like with Yanni, I'm like, when was Yanni popular? I don't even know. It wasn't in 2009.
We actually, Darren McFarland and I interviewed Yanni at the Super Bowl Radio Row 1 year, which was quite surreal. Quite surreal.
In what year?
And that would have been like 2003.
Okay.
So he might have been past his prime by 2009. So,
right. So at least Justin Timberlake, you know, he's a pop star.
A-list. Yeah, he's A-list.
He's A-list. He's supporting a new album. I guess you don't have to move Justin Timberlake, but the NHL wouldn't move for Yanni. So if they won't move for Yanni 15 years ago, who knows what they'll do this time around. But just because of the significant length of, you know, the geographical difference between Vancouver and Nashville, you know, it's not like if they were playing Dallas in the first round, which is still a possibility, even though it's a small possibility. Like, that's not a short, they're in the same time zone. It's a short flight. If they had to do it, I mean, you can make an argument for it, but flying to Vancouver from Nashville direct is 4 to 5 hours at least, and crossing multiple time zones. So it just doesn't make sense. I don't think there's any scenario in which those teams will play back-to-back where they have to travel. I wonder if they would play back-to-back if necessary in games 3 and 4, which isn't great, but both teams would have to do it. So there would be no advantage necessarily in both teams having to play it back-to-back. It's not like during the regular season where one team might be playing on the second half of a back-to-back and the other team has been at home resting. Both teams will have to do it, so there's not much of a competitive advantage.
It does appear to be complicated because the Pearl Jam is a 2-concert deal, which takes the arena out of the mix for 3 days, May 4th through the 6th. And so Ryan O'Reilly might be like, hey, is there a way I could get to one of these? Because he is a huge Pearl Jam fan. But that would be very tricky to not have your building available for 3 straight days at the end of a series where, you know, by that time, round 2 is getting going and, like, you're holding up the whole league if you can't stay on pace. So this could be a little complicated. But, Adam, I want to ask you, too, another thing I noticed about Vancouver. I was watching last night. You mentioned Demko. I think that's a huge thing, getting him back. What version? Because he's had a great year. He's probably going to be a Vezina finalist, probably not win it, but he's probably in the top three. If he brings that into the playoffs, that makes them so much better. But I look at their lineup. Barry Trotz was asked about this yesterday with Jared. It's no comparison in terms of overall playoff experience. Mm-hmm. The Predators roster versus the Canucks roster. So what factor do you think that is? Barry Trotz obviously thinks that's significant.
Yeah, it's an interesting question because, you know, sometimes I can see it as an advantage. Sometimes I think it's something that we talk about as a potential advantage, but which may not ultimately have an advantage. But we talked about this last week, you know, the Canucks core players, specifically Elias Pettersson, Quinn Hughes, and Brock Besser, have only appeared in one postseason, and that was in 2020. That was the bubble. They played 17 games, the Canucks did, in that postseason. Demko was the backup goaltender for the Canucks at that time behind Jacob Markstrom. I think he played in 4 games and made 3 starts. So he has even less NHL playoff experience. Their leading scorer, JT Miller, has a lot of playoff experience. He's played in the playoffs with the Rangers. He played with the Lightning. He didn't win any of the, he wasn't on any of the cup winning teams with the Lightning, but he did have playoff experience with the Lightning. And then of course with the bubble and with the Canucks in the bubble. So he has playoff experience, but it's no contest based on playoff experience, Vancouver versus Nashville. As I stated last week, Ryan McDonough by himself has 185 games of playoff experience. And the only player, active player, with more is Corey Perry, who has, I believe, 196. So by himself, McDonough has more experience than the majority of players on the Canucks, which is why I also wonder if this is a situation where the Canucks might be ripe for an upset, because they don't have that experience. They don't know what it takes to win, quote unquote. And sometimes teams need that experience to ultimately get to where they're going. I've mentioned the Predators as an example of that. I specifically remember 2016, seven games with the Ducks, seven games with the Sharks. I remember how important those two playoff series were for a lot of the core players on that team: Roman Josi, Philip Forsberg, Matthias Ekholm, Ryan Ellis, etc. So I wonder if this is that year for the Canucks. But, you know, I trust Barry Trotz. He knows more about the game than I ever will. He's forgotten more about the game than I'll ever know. So if he thinks it's an advantage, it could be an advantage.
The other thing I think is interesting is the backdrop of Vancouver is, if you wind the clock back about a year and a half, they were a total mess. You had Brock Besser, who's had a really good year. He was asking publicly, it was a huge story, I want to be traded. I want out of here. Like, they looked like a time where they were going to break up the team. They were looking to just change everything. And then Rick Tocchet has come in and done a tremendous job of re-galvanizing everything. So it's quite remarkable, the turnaround. I was watching their broadcast last night, and they had a segment in the intermission just talking about how refreshing it's been. And Adam, you've experienced this, right? Vancouver, if you think things get negative here, Vancouver, there's a lot of negativity around that team. Like, oh, here we go again. They stink. They don't know what they're doing. They had that vibe, but Rick Tocchet has sort of erased that.
Yes. I mean, remember Bruce Boudreau was coaching the Canucks at one point last year.
Yes.
And it was dead man walking, and he knew it, and it was very uncomfortable. Like he knew that he was eventually going to get fired. Like, he had an idea of when he was going to get fired specifically. They were a stretch of home games before they went on a road trip, or a road trip. Actually, it was the other way around, I think. They were on a road trip before they came home for a long homestand, so he knew he was going to get fired on that day, and he did. And Rick Tocchet, to his credit, you know, you saw the makings of some headway that he was that they were making under Tocchet at the end of last season, and of course this year got off to a great start. You know, he's probably a favorite for the Jack Adams, which, Willie, you vote for, so you'll have a say in who wins the Jack Adams.
He's in there. I think he's a heavy favorite. I think I'd be surprised if he didn't win it.
Right. Like, I mean, we talked about this. I think Andrew Burnett absolutely deserves to be a finalist. But I think that Tocchet, just because the Canucks won their division and were a top team for much of the season, might have an edge over Burnett. Because really the Canucks, you know, defied expectations too. Nobody expected them to be this good. But, you know, Tocchet's done a really good job. You know, market, like the Canadian, we know the Canadian markets are much tougher on their teams than their American counterparts for the most part. The Vancouver, because they haven't had much success over the past decade, it gets really negative there. Listening to the 32 Thoughts podcast, and anytime Elliot Freeman talks about the Canucks, there's always that undercurrent of they hate me up there because of all the things I say and all that. There's going to be a lot of pressure on Vancouver, no doubt.
Now, Adam, how do you classify this season for the Nashville Predators, or is this still an incomplete? You want to see how they do in this year's playoff?
I mean, I think the fact that they comfortably made the playoff makes this season, in my opinion, a resounding success, which is not something that you would say about most Predators teams recently, because they had higher expectations than just making the playoffs. But when you consider how many people picked against them in preseason picks to make the playoffs, and the fact that they made it in, of course, they had their 18-game point streak, all that. I absolutely think the season is already a success. And, you know, I sat down with Barry Trotz 2 weeks ago, I think it was. It was before the Boston game, for a story I'm writing for Sportsnet.ca, which will be published later this week or over the weekend. And he said to me, as he said on this station as well, that even he had his doubts about what this team could be. It could be anywhere from bad to sneaky good. And the fact that they made the playoffs and you know, without, you know, you see all the, you look at what happened last night in the NHL, which was captivating theater with Detroit and Washington and Philadelphia. It was awesome to watch. But the Predators didn't have to worry about that. They were in. Like, it wasn't like they had to, you know, make it on the last day of the season. So, to me, anything from this point on should be considered gravy for the Predators. I think the fact that they made the playoffs and they did it somewhat convincingly in the second half of the season, when nobody expected them to make the playoffs at all, makes this season a success already. Now, starting next season, that might not be the case. Mm-hmm. But this season, I think it is.
Now, we've talked about this time period that the Predators are going to have off. And you know, frankly, we've said it's going to end up being too much time. But then after the first game, it really doesn't matter after that when it's just the initial first game. But there's games still to be played before the season ends. Is this good for the NHL that it's ending this way, that we don't know quite what's what, things are not settled? Because as long as things are not settled, eyes are going to continue to be on the NHL and ultimately what their playoff bracket will be.
Right. Think about last night, as I mentioned. You had a situation where the Capitals, where you had four teams, right? Washington, Willie can correct me. Washington, Philadelphia, Pittsburgh, and Detroit were all still alive.
Still mathematically alive, yes.
They were still mathematically alive. And you had the Capitals and Flyers playing each other. You had Detroit tie the game with 3 seconds left to force overtime, which eliminated the Flyers, who then pulled their goalie because they needed a win in regulation. They obviously didn't know the results of the Red Wings game. The Capitals score. They make the playoffs also out of nowhere because they were not expected to do much of anything this season either. You know, the fact that these games still mean something, like the Blues play the Stars tonight. The Stars still haven't clinched the Western Conference. Like that makes that game mean something. If tomorrow the Golden Knights and Kings play, not each other. Vegas plays Anaheim, Los Angeles plays Chicago. Third place in the Pacific Division is still unsettled. Like the Knights have a 1-point lead, but the Kings have the tiebreaker if they tie in points. So one of those teams is going to be in the third place spot and play the Oilers. The other team's going to be in the wild card 2 spot and probably will play the Stars, but there's still meaningful hockey to be played on the last day of the season. So the fact that there are still playoff seedings to be figured out, I'm okay with it. Now, if it was 3 days of meaningless games where all the teams had all their spots and we're just running out the string, that would suck. But the fact that they have these games that mean something up until the last day of the season, I'm okay with it. And I think it makes, you know, a game against, like, under no circumstances would I watch a Golden Knights versus Ducks game on a regular basis. But if I'm still awake at 9 o'clock tomorrow, I may put it on. And that's what the NHL is open for.
Okay, quick sidebar. Adam, you used to cover the Capitals before you came to Nashville. Is this the worst Capitals team ever to make the playoffs? Like minus 37 goal difference? Like how are they there?
It has to be. I remember in 2008 it was they needed to win on the last day of the regular season to make the playoffs, and they won the division by winning that game against, I believe it was Florida, on the last day of the regular season to make the playoffs for the first time in the Alex Ovechkin era. But yeah, the goal differential is just ghastly. Part of it is because the teams around them also stink. I mean, the Flyers at one point recently lost 8 games in a row. You know, the Red Wings were up and down. The Penguins had a point streak, but even then they couldn't make it. So some of it has to do with the fact that the teams around them also stink. But, you know, I think a lot of this has to go to goaltending. I mean, Charlie Lindgren came out of nowhere, you know, for the Capitals this year, played exceptionally well, you know, stole the starting job from Darcy Kemper, you know, played back-to-back games. He shut out the Bruins on Monday and then held the Flyers to 1 goal last.
That's pretty clutch.
Yeah, that absolutely. So, you know, I think goaltending has played a part of it. It also helps that Alex Ovechkin, you know, found the fountain of youth in the second half of the season. You know, more than halfway through the season, he had 8 goals. And you know, he turned it on in the second half of the season, which absolutely helped. But, you know, I think you have to look at basically, like, none of those teams Washington, Detroit, Pittsburgh, and Philadelphia. They were all there to take the playoff, and nobody wanted the spot. I mean, and the Islanders were included in that, too, until they ultimately figured it out and won third place in the Metro. But, I mean, some of it just has to do – I can't remember how long it's been since a team with a worse goal differential made the playoffs. I think it's been like 30 years or something like that since a team that with a negative goal differential of that significance, minus 37, made the playoffs. But, you know – The Islanders made the playoffs, I think, with the worst penalty kill in the league. So then that rarely happens. So who knows?
Adam Vingan, appreciate you for stopping by, Adam, and looking forward to having you on every single week throughout the playoffs. So we'll catch up with you next week. Maybe the Predators have played a playoff game. Maybe they haven't. Who knows?
Yeah.
We'll get around to it eventually.
At some point.
We'll see if Yanni's booked a surprise concert in Vancouver.
Yanni, U2, Pearl Jam. We got several concert characters this upcoming season. But appreciate you, Adam, and always appreciate your insight.
Thanks, guys.
All right, thanks, Adam. Adam Vingan, he is the very best. So normally he will join us Wednesdays at 1 p.m. We'll talk all things Predators and Stanley Cup playoffs. But I do want to react to what we heard from Adam there because, Willie, you brought up something that Barry Trotz said with Jared yesterday, talking about the importance of having playoff experience. And when you look at these two rosters, the Canucks and the Predators, there's an overwhelmingly more playoff experience on the Predator side of things. How valuable is that? And how valuable is that to Barry Trotz? We'll get into that coming up next. We'll get into your thoughts as well. 615-737-1025 is the phone number. Caroline, Willie, D. Mays, we are brought to you by Zen Sports. Start earning cash rewards on your bets today. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-889-9789. Terms and conditions apply. Must be 21 or older and in Tennessee to bet.